Good morning, everyone. We begin in Libya. And as Libyans contemplate the dream of democracy as their revolution goes forward, there's a little matter of a nightmare scenario involving stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction in Libya. What about those?
We have emphasized repeatedly to the TNC that the Libyan opposition has to effectively secure these materials, and we are supporting them in their effort to do that.
That's State Department spokeswoman Victoria Nuland at a news conference in Washington yesterday, talking about the Transitional National Council and the expectation that U.S. policymakers have that the rebels will maintain control of any stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction in Libya and keep them out of the hands of either people outside Libya or desperate characters within Libya who might use them for whatever sort of nefarious means you would use chemical weapons in the last days of a regime, as the Gaddafi regime seems to be in its last days this morning. Joining us now to talk about the WMD issue in Libya is Chris Blanchard, Middle East policy analyst at the Congressional Research Service, joining us from Washington, D.C. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, John.
And Robert Zarate, policy advisor at Foreign Policy Initiative, a former congressional staffer, also from Washington, D.C., sort of the earthquake zone this week in America. Robert, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, Chris, let's begin. What is the issue in terms of severity and quantity involving weapons of mass destruction in Libya? How concerned about this should we be?
Sure. First, on the views I'll express are my own and not necessarily those of the Congressional Research Service or the Library of Congress. As part of its disarmament bargain with the United States and other Western powers, Libya largely accounted for its materials, both with regard to its chemical weapons program and its nuclear program. As a result of engagement by the United States and others over time, the threat from the materials remaining in Libya has been significantly reduced. With regard to chemical agent, there is roughly 11 or 12 metric tons of sulfur mustard agent, less than about 400 or 500 metric tons of liquid precursor chemicals, and the weaponization of those materials was eliminated really right off the bat as soon as Libya decided to begin its disarmament.
So they've got a pair of chemicals that are lethal, but no way to weaponize them and turn them into bombs or anything that would threaten a large population. Is that what you're saying, Chris?
Certainly. The aerial bombs that were prepared by the Gaddafi regime to deliver the mustard agent in particular were, as I said, among the first things destroyed when Libya decided to disarm. The ability to produce new materials has been all but eliminated. Again, through Western engagement, the plant that was producing the materials was converted to a pharmaceutical production facility. Mobile production equipment had been destroyed. And really, what we're dealing with here is a known problem, a known entity with regard to the chemical stockpiles remaining in Libya.
Chris Blanchard describing assets associated with weapons of mass destruction that sound eerily familiar, remembering what was predicted to be in Iraq. Blanchard is a Middle East policy analyst at the Congressional Research Service, not speaking for the CRS, however. Robert Zarate, so it seems as though this wellspring of democracy in Libya is going to constitute a real test of that engagement Chris Blanchard talked about during the Bush administration in the last decade that actually resulted in the weapons of mass destruction being given up by Muammar Gaddafi. We're going to test to see if that actually was legit.
Yeah, that's correct. Thanks to the Bush administration efforts, I think the worst nuclear and chemical chemical weapons delivery munitions have been destroyed. Libya used to have what's called high-enriched uranium, which would have been directly usable in a nuclear explosive. And thanks to the Bush administration engagement, Libya did just get rid of those materials, ship them away. And as Christopher had mentioned, Libya also did destroy aerial munitions, which could have used to disperse chemical weapons. Yes, the chemical materials that Libya does have today apparently are still under the control of Gaddafi forces. According to allied spokesmen, they are still under guard and in secure and remote locations. outside of Tripoli, in some cases hundreds of miles outside of Tripoli. And the hope is certainly that the United States, and in particular the intelligence community, are keeping a watchful eye from afar, since the United States doesn't have any military boots on the ground.
But watchful eye from afar, I mean, how secure is that to make us feel? And if I'm a Libyan citizen, is a watchful eye from afar basically a finger on the button to take out some stockpile with some bombardment or a drone strike?
Well, certainly the United States intelligence community is using probably all sorts of things related to what are called national technical means. It could include satellites, it can include surveillance via drones, those sort of things. And I think, though, as Christopher mentioned, the chemical precursor items and the chemicals that are there aren't—they're not really the sort of nightmare materials that we'd be worried about. And I would actually say that the thing that I'm personally most worried about are what are called shoulder-held surface-to-air missiles. The technical term is MANPADs. And Libya, according to General Carter Ham, who is the commander of the U.S. Africa Command, Libya, as of the start of the hostilities in earlier this year, had as many as 20,000 shoulder-fired surface-to-air missiles. And there is a history of extremist groups using these munitions against commercial airliners. It most recently happened in Kenya when Al-Qaeda affiliated terrorists fired two shoulder-fired missiles at an Israeli airliner. Thankfully, it missed, but it did lead the Bush administration and also the Obama administration subsequently to take a lot of efforts to try to contain that missile threat.
Well, that's pretty alarming. Robert Zarate is a policy advisor at the Foreign Policy Initiative. He's a former congressional staffer speaking with us from Washington, D.C. Chris Blanchard, a shoulder-fire missile could be a weapon of mass destruction if used against a commercial airliner. Yes, before we go?
Certainly. And, you know, I would echo Robert's sentiment that I think the proliferation of MANPADs, small arms and light weapons, is potentially a more immediate priority, both for the Rebel Transitional Council, for the region, and for the United States.
From traditional WMD to the notion of shoulder-fired missiles as a weapon of terror and mass destruction, the situation in Libya, as told by Chris Blanchard, Middle East policy analyst at the Congressional Research Service, and Robert Zarate, former congressional staffer. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you. Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.